Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to a very special edition of Spin the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish.com. Listen, we've been very fortunate over the last few weeks to have as guests on Spin the Rally Pod some of the the biggest names in rallying. Now, if you talk about photography and the biggest names in rallying photography, a man very close to the top of that list, if not at the top of that list, is Colin McMaster, and I'm very pleased to be joined today, socially distanced, by the man himself. Colin, strange times for everyone, but how are you doing?
Oh, how am I doing? Difficult to say. Some days are better than others, but in general, really, really good. Nice, thanks, lovely introduction.
It's very kind of you, fully deserving.
And, you know, how am I doing? The one thing I'm not doing is photography.
Right.
Which, after 30 years of earning a living from a camera, is quite a novelty for me.
That's quite interesting, Cole, because you do live in a gorgeous part of the world in Oxfordshire. You never take your camera out with you on little walks with the kids, and does that interest you or not?
You know what? So many people over the years say to me, "What camera should I buy? What camera should I buy?" You know, and I've got the stock answer now: is that buy the biggest camera you're prepared to carry. Because if it's too big, you won't take it anywhere and you'll never ever use it. And it's kind of superseded now because the phone in your pocket has typically a very, very good camera. And that's, you know, that's what I tend to use more than anything else.
No, but tell me, Cole, I did see some of your family pictures from your holiday last year. I think you had a rather lovely family holiday. Was it last year, the year before you went to South Africa?
Fortunate to get away quite a lot.
You took a nice little camera on holiday. Did you do a little compact camera? What was that? Can you remember?
Well, so many people have been telling me about mirrorless. Must go mirrorless, must go mirrorless. And I've quite a Luddite. I'm still, when I work, I use SLR Canon equipment. But I bought a mirrorless system. Just two lenses, two fixed lenses, a wide angle and a standard lens. And blow me, it was fantastic. The pictures from this little Sony, really, really good. A fraction of the size, a fraction of the weight, and something comfortable to carry around everywhere. So yeah,
that's, yeah, there you go. Go, you know.
But by the way, I'm not a techie. I'm not. I'm not into camera tech at all. Right. I try and make my kit last a long time, and rallying's not obviously the ideal environment for that. It takes quite a battering, but I don't rush out to buy the latest camera, the latest lens. I don't think it makes you a better photographer, to be honest.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, I suppose being a great photographer, if you had to put your percentages on the kit, the skill, the intuition, the ability to see a good picture, you know, the majority of it, yeah, the kit is important, but the most important thing is to be able to recognise, I suppose, a good picture, to have the skill to know when the right time is. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I often say this as well, you know, what makes a good rally picture? And for me, a good rally picture works without the car, which is a little bit of a luxury given that at McLaren we make a calendar every year, which is a wide landscape panoramic calendar, and you know, we've kind of formed a reputation over the years for landscape photography. It's a form of photography I like to do anyway. So if I can find a nice landscape, a scene, foreground, background, all these things are important. And then, push, you add a rally car to it. It's
sensational, isn't it? That's interesting because, and we'll come on to how the partnership, McLaren is an iconic name in rally photography. And in some ways, it's a slightly unusual partnership, that kind of Anglo-German. You don't see too many Anglo-German setups, that's for sure. But we'll come on to that a little bit, because where I'd like to start, Cole.
But just to butt in there, so Reinhard Klein is the least German I've ever met. He's not Germanic. I think he's probably African. He's probably. Yeah. I think he's Kenyan.
I think his spirit's in Africa, isn't it? His heart is for sure. His heart, you know. And let's talk about that. I want to take you back, Cole, to your early days. But let's talk about that, because you mentioned, you know, the calendars and the great landscapes, and you know that's really where Reinhard really differentiated himself from other photographers. They were all close up, lots of dust, lots of, you know, messy cars, all the rest, where he would go onto a mountaintop, and that incredible picture from Africa with the Maasai warriors and the car. Yeah, the car is there, you can see the dust trail, you can just about pick out the car, but the important thing was the setting, and that's what he's known for, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, just to give you the whole picture here, that, you know, Reinhard's my best friend, you know, and he's my business partner, but he's also, he's my hero, a photographic hero. I grew up in a family that was, motorsport was all around. My father was a bike rider, my grandfather worked in motorsport, and so we had the magazines, you know. As a kid in the 80s, there was a lot of visual magazines, and Grand Prix International, I remember, like, 1980s, it was Formula One was turbo and glamorous and exciting, and you got these magazines, and then after the F1 you'd see the rally pictures, and I remember looking at these pictures thinking, wow, that's something special. And oh, look, little byline, Reinhard Klein, and you know, to meet him was something, and then to eventually form a company with him and to work with him, it's I wouldn't change any of that. And wow. You know, you could talk so long to Reinhard about how he started, and he started in the 70s. His first rallies, he hitchhiked to the Monte Carlo rally from Germany.
Telling me this story.
Yeah, he hitchhiked. I think he said he had the equivalent of 30 euros in his pocket.
That's right. Because I think this year was something like, was that 1970? Because it was his 50th Monte this year, I think, wasn't it?
Or 50 years.
It was incredible, because he told me exactly the same story. He set out, he thought, well, 30 euros or however many Deutschmarks that was back in the day.
I think it was, I can't remember the year, I think it was 77.
Right, okay.
Because isn't it 40 years of the World Championship? Was that?
Terrible.
For you listeners, I have to confess, I've been blessed with the world's worst memory for dates. So I apologise in advance.
Between the two of us, we could be in trouble.
Pictures, stages. I'm good on stages. Just dates, I'm absolutely hopeless. Right. But no, just to finish that off, I mean, Reinhard, after Monty, he went to Rally Sweden with his girlfriend, now wife, in a Volkswagen Beetle from Germany. That was the hotel. A Volkswagen Beetle's air-cooled. It doesn't have a heater. Yeah. So they slept in a Beetle in Sweden in February.
Just incredible. We'll come on to that relationship call between you and Reinhard a little later on. But let's go back. Let's go back to your early days. And again, you've hinted at a motorsport family. Yeah. But what came first for you? If you go back to your teenage years, was it motorsport or was it photography? And how did the photographic passion develop with you?
Well, I grew up in a house where there was a copy of, I think, the two magazines came every week. One was Motor, which was the car industry. My father worked in the car industry for some rather nice firms of Fiat and Alfa Romeo. And there's always car magazines around, and Autosport was another one that we'd see. And I remember we'd get in the car, often July, we'd drive. We lived in Scotland, near Glasgow. We'd drive down to Brands Hatch. 76, I saw this British Grand Prix, the famous one, which Hunt Lauda. And we drove down from Scotland to go and see that. So, yeah, motorsport was there. You know, Fiat sent the works cars to the 78 Scottish Rally. No, I was taken there with my dad, you know. So,
at what point did you think, actually, you know, I'm not going to go and be a business executive? Although you are, in some ways, you're a bit of a captain of industry.
I didn't get into this to be a manager.
Exactly. So, but at what point did you think, I want to make a living out of this? And then at what point did you realise, I'm good enough to make a living out of this?
Well, it's, let's not get ahead of ourselves here. It was, when I was 11, I had my 11th birthday present from my parents was a camera. It was a little, took 110 film, which was a horrible, horrible format with a plastic cartridge with two little reels, and you you loaded the cartridge into this camera. I think it was fixed focus, fixed everything. You couldn't change anything on it. And but there was a passion. There was suddenly you could take your pictures and then you had to post them. You posted your little cartridge when you finished. 24 exposures, sent it off in the mail. 28 days later, you got your pictures back. And but, you know, it was addictive for me. And then that became, you know, I was upgraded. I got Olympus Trip 35. I remember that was my next camera. Something I must have been about 13, 14 then. And so that was 35mm film. And a lens, had a 2.8 lens. It was basically the world's first compact camera. David Bailey, the famous, famous fashion photographer, he had a, he ran the advertising for them on television.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that in the 80s, early 80s.
Yeah, you had to have the Olympus Trip 35, and I did. And that's when things really started to take off. So I was, motorsport was in the background, but photography was my hobby, it was my passion. Mm. Because, it says a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but my mum was absolutely desperate that I didn't get into bikes.
Right.
And my dad, right. You know, too many bad stories to tell you about. But my dad competed on bikes. My grandfather, I said before, he was sports administrator. He was a journalist, but he was on the FIM, which is the bike equivalent of the FIA. He was the Irish delegate. He ran the Northwest 200, part of the committee there, and he was involved with the Isle of Man TT races. So road racing was very much, you know, I'm Irish, and that's part of the culture there. But, you know, my parents did all they could to get me away from that.
Wow. So they didn't discourage your photographic aspirations. You know, a lot of parents would, and I'm sure you must have heard it, you know, this isn't a proper job. You're never going to make a living from this. Okay. You must have heard that more than once from your parents.
Yeah, but just to go back to Reinhard, his father said to him, his father was a teacher and his father's father was a teacher, and all they wanted was for Reinhard to be a teacher. And he said to Reinhard, Reinhard Senior said, yeah, don't take pictures for a living. You will never be able to afford a Ferrari. And that became the biggest incentive ever.
Yeah, of course
for,
it would.
For Reinhard. And so as soon as he could afford a Ferrari, he bought one.
Well, he's got one. Yeah. 6R4 now. He's got all sorts of lovely cars, hasn't he?
So back to my story changed dramatically in 95. 95, 80. So I told you I'm bad at dates.
95. Yeah. We're 85.
So bad on dates.
How old are you in 85?
Oh, I'd like to say I was about 8.
What year were you born? Minus what year?
Depends who's asking.
So I'm 70. You're not. We're about the same age, aren't
we? We're more or less the same. Yeah. I celebrated turning 50 last November.
Yeah, no, it just passed me by. I didn't celebrate it. But yeah, I know what you mean, Cole. So 1985, you're 15, 16.
Yep.
What happened?
We emigrated as a family to South Africa. And
you travelled a lot. Scotland, South Africa.
So we moved to South Africa, and of course, as a 15-year-old, I went to school in South Africa. They had an issue with me at school because I think it was 3-4 hours a week you had to do Afrikaans, and I didn't speak a word of Afrikaans.
I do. try this one. Pass op vir de hond.
Something about the dog.
Yeah, watch out for the dog. Watch out for the dog. That's all I know in Afrikaans. Sorry, Cole.
So, what do we do with this guy? He's got, we don't know how long he's going to be at school for. There's no point in starting him with Afrikaans. So, I convinced them, it was quite a posh school, actually. I was a day boy at a boarding school in the middle of Johannesburg. I convinced them to let me do photography and to build a dark room in the school.
Wow.
Which it was a lovely old school as well. It was St. John's College in Johannesburg. It was an old, almost like a, how do you describe it? Like a castle church town.
Harry Potter like?
Very much. I went to Hogwarts. I went to Hogwarts, South Africa.
They have one of those big dining rooms where you all sat along the big long tables. And
fortunately, it was only boys. So, you know, we were all Harry Potters and Malfoys, weren't they? But anyway, there was a tower at this school with no windows. Sort of circular tower up right at the top, and it was the ideal thing. Ironically, it had plumbing, had a sink in there. So this was, you couldn't wish for a better dark room. And I went to this school, knew nobody. I was the boy that disappeared into a dark room for 4 hours a week. However, that made me super popular because you could put a sign outside saying do not disturb. So basically, I was the smoke hub. Yeah. All the smokers became my mates because I had the key to the dark room.
All the cool kids in those days.
Yeah, so they would all come and ask me for the key so they could go and have a cigarette.
Right. So that was a big step forward, as you say.
Yeah, but there was another side to the South Africa thing where my father went there. He was working for Alfa Romeo. Alfa Romeo there had a factory. They used to build cars in South Africa. Very nice ones, actually. The
Sud,
GTV. They did do the Sud, but it was the GTV that they were building.
The 80s GTV. My dad had two in the 80s. Beautiful cars, two white ones.
You could have the 2.5 V6. That was everywhere.
GTV6, they called it, didn't they? That was a heck of a car.
But in South Africa, because of the touring car racing was quite popular, they made a homologation special, which was a 3-litre V6.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was the car. We had one of those. Anyway, we digress. But Alfa Romeo, it was based at a place called Midrand. Midrand gets its name because it's halfway between Johannesburg and Pretoria, which is also roughly where Kyle Army is. Nice. So during the school holidays, which actually was before I even went to the school there, because I arrived their school holidays being Southern Hemisphere, there was the winter in the Northern Hemisphere. So I had all this time. During that time, the Formula One teams, Brabham and McLaren in particular, they would do their winter testing at Kyle Army.
Right.
So for something to do, my dad would drop me off at Kyle Army and I'd spend the day there.
Taking pictures?
Yeah, taking pictures.
Wow. Have you still got some of those pictures?
I could show you. Yeah, I have actually.
Wow.
Yeah. There'd be people like, you'd go in the pit lane and there'd be Gordon Murray in a pair of shorts and nothing else. And a Brabham, I think back then it would have been a BT53, BT54, one of the best cars ever. Used to see I must have seen more laps of that car than anyone before the first Grand Prix of the season.
Wow.
So you're taking more pictures of it.
Yeah, you're taking pictures and someone's seen these pictures and thought, ooh, this kid's got better talent.
You're getting ahead of yourself again. So after a year in South Africa, it was quite clear that the education thing, I needed to do O-levels and A-levels because there is a brain in there. Doing quite well. So I was my sister and I, she's a couple of years older than me, Jill her name is, were allowed to return to the UK, but my parents stayed overseas, and I went to a boarding school, and my sister, she got a job, actually, in London, and so my folks set her up with an apartment in London, and she was my guardian. Right. Anyway, so school, I did 2.5 years of school.
What posh school did you go to?
Oh, it was Shiplake College,
right,
in Henley-on-Thames. And I... exactly. But it was a great place, actually. I haven't been back since the day I left until I was due to go...
You're not being invited back. You're an alumni. You're a distinguished people.
Believe it or not, I got an email about 3 months ago. Would I come back and talk to the sixth formers?
Wow.
And the photo students and... May the 12th, we were supposed to do that.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. So that would have been my return. And they said, by the way, did you know that another famous alumni was Max Chilton?
Right.
I didn't know any of this at all.
Right.
Funnily enough, we're talking here close to where I live, which is Oxford.
Yeah.
And at the time when I was at that school, no one had ever been to Oxford.
Right.
And I could have been the first, but I didn't. I didn't go. No, I went to Bath University.
Right. So come on, let's see the progression of the photographic career.
So I wanted to get taking pictures of the racing cars. That's what I really wanted to do. And when you're a student, you've got an awful lot of time off and time downtime. And I was driving to places like Silverstone, Brands Hatch, wherever I could go, Thruxton, all these UK racing circuits. I'd lent on my contacts in Ireland with my grandfather. He's passed away by then, but he, through using his name, I was able to contact places like the Belfast Telegraph, Car Sport magazine, and persuade them to pay me to photograph the Irish drivers. And at that time you had people like Eddie Irvine who were coming through doing Formula Ford and then Formula 3. So
real characters.
So as a student, I was getting £50, £100 a weekend.
So what was, Cole, your very first, can you remember the first photo that you got paid for and went, for taking a picture? Was there one particular picture that you remember?
Yeah, I do actually, because it wasn't just taking the pictures. I'd write a little report.
Wow.
And there was an Irish driver, Bernard Dolan. He was in Formula Vauxhall Lotus. So I think I ended up being his PR man. Aged, I don't know, 17. But I was, because I would do this photos of words and they would be published in Car Sport magazine. I never saw the Belfast Telegraph, but I used to make prints, black and white prints, and mail them. And I get a check every so often.
Wow.
it was great. But
that's a great line, Cole. I think what used to be his PR man.
I'm not sure. I don't know what he's doing now.
It was a different
I wonder if
world,
he remembers me.
So we're talking now late 80s, early 90s. Late 80s.
Told you dates.
Yeah.
No, this would have been
17 or 18 years old.
This would be 88.
88.
Yeah.
Good year that was.
88. Oh. So.
Tears for Fears.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit of Aha as well at that time.
But at this time, I would meet the other photographers, right. All the British photographers, and there was a couple that, you know, really made good friendships with. And one guy, Peter Fox, you should name these guys, it was Darren Heath and Peter Fox. And we kind of got known as like the Brat Pack at the time, and some great stories to tell with those guys.
Because it was quite glamorous, I would have thought. You know, a lot of your friends and your contemporaries were probably going to university and doing serious jobs.
Mate, Donington Park in the mud in March isn't particularly glamorous.
Right.
But it was, you'd see these guys at the weekend, and Peter Fox, Foxy, he was really good to me. He said, you know, you're a student, you know, you've got, I don't know, 6 weeks off in the summer. Come and talk to my boss. Yeah. And I did. And ironically, where we're talking now, that was less than 2 miles from here, was a company called Words and Pictures. And that was the agency that I ended up joining. But I worked for them for the summers, a couple of summers as a student. And back then they had a studio, and the darkroom was the big thing. And I knew how to print black and white, and they taught me colour. So I used to work in a dark room, go and do things like touring cars and F3 during the vacations.
So, you know, it's clear there's a circuit racing back
then. Oh, yeah.
So let's move you on then, Cole, to the realisation that, no, I want to go rallying.
Yeah, well, this is all part of the story, because I left university. I got a full-time job at Words and Pictures.
We're sitting in a public place, socially distanced, and it's a rather lovely day. And Colin, look at those clouds.
They are absolutely stunning.
Does that not make
stunning.
You want to take a picture?
It does.
Want to take a picture.
They look like squid.
Squid, or I thought maybe they look a bit like slightly abstract ferns in some way. I don't know.
Scotch ferns.
I don't know. Anyway.
So I was full-time employed, and there must have been three photographers there and a studio guy. And my career was absolutely taking off. That I did a Formula One test at the end of 92, Paul Ricard, or the start of 93. Went really well. It was down in the south of France. There was snow-capped mountains, and I just made it look quite nice. I was really pleased with that. And then I ended up on the Grand Prix circuit.
So, Words and Pictures. People were asking for you at this point. You were keeping the bosses happy by taking the pictures, or so
that's all you could do. You know, there were three well-known agencies in the UK you could go and join if you're fortunate enough, and I happened to join one of them, and it's like, and they taught me a lot, and from there I was. What happened next? Somehow the agency got a deal to photograph. I know exactly now, I remember. We're quite close to Banbury. And the PR girl for Subaru at the time, Belinda Jellett, she lived at the edge of the Cotswolds. And her drive to work took her past Words and Pictures where I was working. And one day in there was a knock on the door, and it was Belinda Jellett. She wanted to talk to the boss. They'd just signed a rally driver called Colin McRae, and they would like to have some studio photos done of Colin McRae. Could we do that? And that was where it all started, because about a week or two later, Colin came with a makeup artist, and he was uncomfortable as all hell. You could tell this was not his environment. But that shoot went really well. I was involved somehow. I can't fully remember. And they were, at the time, they were sponsored by one tobacco company. And they were changing, yeah, so they were Rothmans, and they were changing to 555.
Right, right.
But not for the World Rally Championship. This was for Asia Pacific.
That's right. 555 was, I know a little bit about it. I worked for them. It was a Chinese brand.
Exactly.
So that's why there was so much focus in that area, I'd have thought.
So quite quickly, through words and pictures, the agency, the opportunity came to, for one of us to go and do Asia Pacific rallying. And I jumped at the chance. And this was like, it was like the boy being, it was, it, how can you say, it's the golden ticket to the chocolate factory. Yeah. If Belinda hadn't knocked on the door, if that first shoot hadn't gone well, you know, the next thing I knew, I was in New Zealand.
It is amazing how incidents like that, small things, you know, can shape your life. Not just your career.
Yeah.
Can completely shape your life. As you say, if she'd chosen one of the other three agencies, you may still, you know, who knows what you might have been doing.
Yeah, but of course, the, you know, I only ever wanted to do racing, and I was doing the Formula One season. I was doing all the races. And then I had the chance to do the Asia Pacific, and I was still doing the touring cars. And this was going on for quite some time. And as a little aside, Belinda's boyfriend was a young Brit called Richard Burns. And that's how I met Burnsy, through Belinda. And Burnsy lived at home with his parents. And now he got the big contract with Subaru for the British Rally Championship. He had to move out, you know, he needed somewhere to live. So Belinda suggested to myself and my girlfriend at the time, why don't we all get a house together? Which we did, which was in the Cotswolds.
Yeah.
Really nice. It was, she, Belinda basically had nice taste, so she found a really nice big house. So needed someone to split the rent. Yeah. And that so that's
always better to leave these things to the girls. To be honest. That might sound sexist. I'm really sorry, but it's true. It is true.
But Burnsy was the new kid on the block for Subaru, and he was doing the Asia Pacific Championship, and so was I. But, you know, he'd come back and do whatever, and I'd end up going, I'd come back, down tools. Go, you know what it's like, you do a Formula One race, and then the next weekend you do a touring car race. And at the end of the year, when you do your accounts, you think, why have I just spent £2,500 parking a car at Heathrow Airport this year? You know, it was way too much, and I was traveling 250 days in a year. So something had to give, and I'd love to say, you know, I said, that's it, you know, I'm stopping the racing, I'm doing rallying, but it, at the same time, this was very, very early 96, there was a brand new Formula One magazine coming along called F1 Racing. And I was interviewed for a full-time job with F1 Racing, along with another photographer called Darren Heath, who I mentioned earlier. Darren's a good friend of mine. And I think we were both given sort of an assignment to do, and the editors and the magazine publisher, they looked at us both, spoke to us both. And thankfully, they chose Darren. That was the best thing ever, because they chose the best Formula One photographer possible.
Yeah.
And it was the kick I needed to go and stop doing racing and do rallying. So that was early 96. I left the company I was working for, Words and Pictures, 96, and basically worked for Subaru. And that the door had opened by then. We were already doing Asia Pacific World Championship. Colin was world champion.
So you're building a bit of a reputation for yourself within rallying at this point. People know who Colin McMaster is.
Well, going back to the Grand Prix International magazine from the 80s, I knew Reinhard, but I'd never met him. And then on, I think it was the RAC rally in something like 94, I remember getting in someone's way. Stop control.
I know a bit about that.
Yeah.
Easy so, to do, call, don't worry.
Yeah, exactly. It was a night, it was somewhere, it must have been somewhere in the, up in the Lake District at night time. And I got on this guy, he didn't say anything to me, he just grumbled and moved on. And someone said to another guy, Bob McCaffrey, said to me, he said, you know, you've just got in Reinhard's way. I said, what do you mean? He said, that was Reinhard Klein who's just huffed off now. So I thought, oh no, how could you be so stupid? You've upset your hero.
Oh, wow. But so you're 96, you're doing Asia Pacific. You've decided, or it's been decided for you, you're not going into circuit racing full time.
Yeah.
You are now pretty much established within the rally community as the young go-to photographer.
I was the youngest. Absolutely the youngest.
28, 29 years old, it would still be very, very young.
24, 25.
Well, yeah, round about mid-20s. Tell us then about how Reinhard Klein goes from being, as you say, your idol to your business partner.
Well, I said at the start, I'm not a techie, but that's a bit of a lie because the whole photographic industry was going through a revolution. Digital was coming. We didn't know it at the time, but at this time, what we were doing was we were taking photos on color negative film and color slide film. And what you would have to do with your color negatives, you'd have to process that film, and you had to something the size of an attaché case would be a scanner inside there, and you'd have all your chemical pots and your hair dryer to dry your film, and you'd basically process your own color negatives in the hotel normally, and scan through this digital scan. Then you'd have to hook it up to the hotel telephone. That was an absolute nightmare. I could tell you some stories about that. But so this guy Bob McCaffrey was by far the leader in the field of this. You know, he was brilliant. He used to be able to bare wire a telephone, get the loose connections and crocodile clips. You name it, he had it done. And with 56K dial-up modems, probably doesn't mean anything to most of the people listening here, but boy, they were slow. You know, one picture was something like 5 minutes to send.
Slow, but absolutely cutting edge those days.
The sound of one of those modems connecting from a hotel, you had to first make sure that reception didn't butt in. Housekeeping. Anyway, so Bob was the, I keep saying digital, but it wasn't invented then. This was pre-digital.
It's an incredible thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's not just the process. It was actually the taking of the pictures in those days. Yes. You had to work everything out yourself and then do everything yourself in the evening in terms of sending and developing.
So Bob,
what did you call that? Not analog isn't the right word either.
Well, I think it was because you digitized a picture.
Right.
But it was.
Of course you did.
You called it by the name of the scanner. Leafax was a popular one. Right. Leafax was about 15 kilos in a big steel box. It was a terrible thing. But no, you just called it whatever the scanner was called. And Bob was working for LAT Photographic, who is still a top agency in the world. And that was back then they were Motorsport News, MN. Mm-hmm. He went to all the rallies for MN and Ford as a client. Reinhard was a Toyota man by now. He was one of the few that could walk straight into the factory in Cologne without a pass or anything. No one would ever stop him. He was Mr. Toyota with a camera. And as you've alluded to in other podcasts, which I've avidly listened to, excellent Dirt Fish podcast, that things were about to change for Toyota in 96. We didn't know at the time. But while I was befriending Reinhard, and Bob was the go-between, he came up with this idea that we would pool resources. I had Subaru as a contract, Bob had Ford, and Reinhard had Toyota, plus the name. But we needed a name. And a former boss of yours, or connection of yours, ironically, we were talking about him today, Hugh Chambers. He's now the... what's his position at Motorsport UK?
Chief Executive of Motorsport UK.
Yeah, okay.
I think so, that's his position. Well, he talked to him this morning, strangely enough.
So he was the commercial director at ProDrive. So basically, he was my boss at Subaru. And
he was one of the original partners at ProDrive, wasn't he?
I think he had a share for a while. When he came in, I think he had.
Did he come in? Okay.
He came in and was given a share. Yeah. We digress. Yeah. Lovely man. Yeah. His wife, fantastic photographer.
Beautiful, but an artist.
Elizabeth Hoth, fantastic portrait photographer. Yeah. Hugh came up with the name McKlein.
Did he really?
Yeah, I mean, we obviously wanted it at Kleinmaster, but that was never going to work. No, it was Hugh. He came up with the name.
So there's the Sheraton Hotel in Australia. Because there's Colin McMaster, the Mick. There's Bob McCaffrey, and there's Reinhard Klein.
Yeah, exactly.
So is that basically how it came about?
Yep, totally. That was down to Hugh Chambers, came up with the name.
And a legend was born.
Yeah, and he didn't charge us for the name. The guy that did the logo did. Anyway, that was the end of 96, and we arranged everything, talked it through the principal in Australia, 96. And I think something like 2 weeks later, Toyota were banned or kicked out. Mm-hmm. It was all about to turn a bit sticky. Mm. But we went ahead. I remember going to Cologne in December. Mm. Oh, that's right. There was I'd broken my leg or something. I injured my leg. I couldn't do the RAC, which was not part of the World Championship was for 2 litres. Remember when they were rotating rallies?
Yeah, yeah.
So it was, I went to Cologne on a pair of crutches in the Christmas market in Cologne. There's a photograph of Bob Reinhard and myself. And basically that's when we made the partnership. Because we went from the bank, the Kreissparkasse Bank in Cologne, that was where we went and basically opened an account.
That's incredible.
So we had to open an account because the first thing we bought pretty much was a digital camera. 27,000 Deutschmarks.
Huge amount of money.
Yeah, but that was £12,000 back then.
Jeez. And then, as you say, they kept, you know, every 6 months you'd have to spend another 12,000 if you wanted to keep up with it. But Colin, that, I mean, that really was quite a rapid progression for you from taking Colin McRae's portrait to being part of what then was the biggest agency, probably still is, certainly the most iconic agency in rallying. It was. You know, fair to say, a meteoric rise.
Well, we set out from day one to offer clients a service, and it was tailored around the fact that we could offer this digital service, which no one else could. Right. So websites were coming. The internet had been invented. People needed pictures quickly, so we could do that element of it. Reinhard was still doing his beautiful landscapes, publishing calendars. We started publishing more and more as well. That was another thing. And you know, Reinhard is absolutely passionate, particularly about the older days. So he was busy buying up old archives and digitizing those. So suddenly, from going from being a photographer, more of a business of publishing, archiving, and on-event photography.
So it was, you know, in terms of the coming together of the talents.
Yeah.
It was fortuitous in terms of timing, in terms of the progress of technology and recognizing the way technology. So it was, a lot of it, I suppose, was to do with right time, right place, right people.
You know, could have done with Toyota sticking around.
That's true.
But having said that, they entered random rallies with the Celica while they were still. They went away, didn't they?
There were customers,
Corolla.
Weren't there? There were a lot of customers around. I remember George saying, George Donaldson, who was the team manager at the time, saying they did go to the Safari that year, but purely to support. I think it was Duncanson, was it, in a
yeah, I did that rally,
and a couple of others, but yeah, that was interesting.
I had a few problems with George in the early days.
I can imagine. I think a few people, it's fair to say.
And George, if you're listening, I never stood on the roof of that car in Kenya. And what else? I did not hold the sump guard, or sump, in New Zealand on a lone Toyota.
Oh, dear. Yeah, I know there's a few stories I'm sure to tell there. Colin, I mean, it's fascinating stuff. We really could make a good hour, 2 hours out of this, because we haven't really even touched on your view on what makes a good photographer and talking about your best photographic memories. And we haven't talked about Richard Burns, but we will. You know what? We're going to do a second episode of this at some point. And we'll save that for later on in the year. But
it, you know, is, I can't stand box sets on TV.
Well, this is going to be a box set.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about that.
But
can we not just belt through it?
You're only 27, 28 years old, and it's taken, let me check, 40 minutes to get to that point. And what we really wanted to talk, the excuse for coming down and talking to you today, Col, was Rally Portugal Week. And we're obviously featuring Rally Portugal heavily on dirtfish.com. Now, you know, 2001, so you've been a partnership with Reinhard and Bob for how many years now? 4 or 5 years now. You went to Portugal, and 2001 Rally Portugal is remembered really for one thing, and one thing only, and that was the weather. You've done however many hundreds of rallies. That one was possibly the most challenging.
I mean, you can always pick out, I remember such and such a stage where it rained, or it was so cold in Norway that one year, or whatever, you know, just certain things. But this was non-stop, 2001. And, you know, just to preface it, it was a national disaster, and it had been raining in the north of Portugal since January. I think we went there in March.
Wow.
And, you know, it was a national disaster. People lost their lives, and bridges were washed, or a bus was washed off a bridge the week before the rally. So to put it into context, you know, in recent years, in such a situation, that rally would never have run. But it did. And I think there was a little bit of a let off with the rain for a few days before, but absolutely, it chucked it down like mad. And that year was the first year we'd started working with a brand new magazine. See, rallying, it had 7 manufacturers at that time, David Richards took over the commercial rights, the ISC, International Sports World Communicators.
That's right, yeah.
Yep, that was all happening. Mm. Money was, there was being put into the sport to put it on television. It was on Channel 4 in the UK, and, you know, the whole format of broadcasting rallies was changing. And at the same time, they launched a magazine called Rally XS. And fortunately, we got the deal to be the photographic suppliers, McLean, is the, for Rally XS. And we had, Portugal was the third round that year. We had Monte Carlo in Sweden. And of course, new magazine, new ideas. This magazine was all about the glamour. You've got to have glamour, glamour of rallying.
Right, I remember that. Oh. Yeah, I remember it turning up on my desk at BAT.
Yeah, yeah.
So I remember seeing it in W.H. Smith on the shelves as well. It was, you know, it was fairly well distributed.
Yeah, it was a bi-monthly magazine.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There was plenty of time to do nice features and plans.
It was kind of cross between sport and lifestyle, wasn't
yeah.
it? They tried to make it a little more appealing than purely to yeah. the rally fan.
But the publishers had never been to a rally. And everything was going...
What was his name? Remind me of his name. Tim.
Tim Bully.
Tim Bully.
Fantastic.
Tim Bully, yeah. What a lovely guy from yeah. Haymarket.
Exactly. But he was under pressure from his bosses to...
Of rallying. You knew a lot about publishing, not a lot about rallying. Sorry, Tim, if you're listening.
So Tim's remit was to make this glamorous magazine. And the first two rounds we did was Monte Carlo in Sweden. And... It might sound glamorous, but when you're up in the you know, the mountain of the Alps, can be minus temperatures. There's not an awful lot of glamour there.
No, not really.
You know,
yeah.
And you know, Sweden, everyone's like wearing parkas and ski gear. So
smelling of wood smoke.
So we did not deliver the glamour, and I remember, you know.
And then you go to Portugal, you say.
Yeah, but really, this was we'd only done two rallies, and already they're getting a little bit. Edgy.
Wow.
Well, this McLean's not delivering the glamour, so
they're blaming you for the lack of glamour.
Yeah. So
Reinhard
said, "Listen, you know, he's quite a pragmatic bloke. He said, listen, you know, if you want rally, if you want glamour, come with us. Come in the car, and every time you see some glamour, you know, nudge us, point it out, and we'll take a picture of it.
Yeah.
Not a problem. Come with us." Yeah. So the editor Andrew Golby came to Rally Portugal in search of glamour. So that's a little bit of the background. And to be honest with you, it started quite well because going back to the back in the day, all the teams, seven teams, but they didn't all start the season with a brand new car. So some might introduce a car a little bit later. So this was round three and Hyundai launched their Accent WRC2 on the eve of the rally in Porto. But Hyundai then is an unrecognizable organization to the Hyundai today.
MSD
and Milton Keynes, correct. And they launched their new car in a port wine factory with all the journalists. Now you know these journalists. what a potential mistake. But there was glamour there. They had these dancers and they really did put on a good show and everyone left with a bottle of port wine and inside and out.
Yeah.
I remember leaving this launch to go to dinner, actually, and the water was just bucketing down. And I don't know how well you know Porto, but the Douro River flows into the sea at the river mouth there. And one side of the river is the port wine houses, and on the other side of the river, you've got all the fancy tourist restaurants.
That's right. Yeah.
And we crossed the bridge into a tourist restaurant. We went to a restaurant under street level, down some steps. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
Not a great idea when it's flooding.
When the water came running down the concrete steps into the restaurant, you know you've probably chosen the wrong venue. So that was kind of the start of it. And then the first day of that year's rally was the FAF stages.
Right.
And Reinhard was so pleased with himself because the first year ever he'd rented, he really pushed the boat out here. He rented a 4x4. Smallest one he could find, but he had a 4x4. And he said, this year, you know, I'm going to drive over the fields, which you could, because there's two locations on the FAF stage near the end. And they're about 2.5 km apart. One's a famous junction with split in the tarmac. The cars come downhill.
Yes, with
turn
a big
left
Colin McRae
exactly.
flag on it now.
Yeah.
So left and then right and back up the hill.
Exactly. And that literally has, I don't know how many people would go there.
10,000?
Oh, more than that.
Really?
More than that. And then two and a half k's down the road, you've got the big jump. So the idea was, you know, he could drop one of us off and then drive down over the fields, which he'd seen.
Up the side of the hill.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Maybe mountain, but hill.
Because it was doable on a motocross bike or an enduro bike. So it must be doable in a car. So he's got the Rally XS editor in the car with him, and he takes to the hills only to... And when we were up to the wheel hubs in mud, spinning wheels, it was time to get out.
In search of glamour.
In search of glamour. The only glamour was a guy came up to us with a tow rope. I think, what on earth does he want? It was foggy. You couldn't see much. So this guy with a tow rope came wanting us to tow him. And we're stuck. As stuck as you could possibly imagine. So luckily, Andrew Golby, the editor, he really enjoyed this. He thought this was fantastic.
Adventure.
Yeah, he really did see rallying then. And, but it was an amazing event because the first two rounds, world champion was Gronham at the time. Mm-hmm. So defending champion Gronham, Richard Burns, Colin McRae. And this was a British magazine, Rally Access. Mm-hmm. It was a big story, Burns, McRae, as it would pan out that year when they had a showdown at the end for the championship. But they had 0 points after two rounds.
Wow.
And that became three for McRae in, early on as well. And he was in early retirement. And I think the road position was back then was pretty much what it is today. You ran in championship order at the start. Mm. And in those conditions, you
at
didn't...
At the back of the field, you were in a terrible mess.
Yeah, which was Gronham and Burns, wasn't it?
So was it, what I love about rallying is that, it is unpredictable. We do get variety, and the variety we get, from the places we go to the weather that we experience when we go to these places. So, every kind of extreme offers an opportunity for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
But were there good pictures to be taken that week?
Colin, I say this a lot, that the worse the conditions, the better the pictures. Yeah. And it's so often true. Yeah. You just got to go with it. And I mean, back then, I think I was still shooting colour slide film. And guys today wouldn't understand what that meant, to say you're limited to 100, maybe 200 ISO.
Right, okay. And ASA, many pictures a weekend as well.
Well, that's another thing. You know, roll of film, 36 exposures. Say if you took 20 rolls, that's 720 pictures, isn't it?
Some people take 100 pictures of one car. You know, 5 or 6
just
seconds.
Think about that for a second. So I say if I shot 20, and then Reinhard would have shot 20, Bob would have shot everything on digital. I took a digital camera as well and did a bit of both, but it's a different time. Had to make sure. Film was expensive. Mm. The colour slide film we were using, once you'd processed it, easily £10 a roll for €15 or whatever. You do the maths.
Adds up over the course of a season, adds up to a lot of money.
You do the maths because I can't.
Yeah, I can do the maths for you. How many?
Well, say so 10 rolls would have been, say, €150. So €300. You've got Reinhard as well. So we're €600 before.
Before there's anything else to pay for. Paul, fascinating stuff, I have to say. It's been an absolute joy and a pleasure to sit socially distanced with you this morning.
This is the most social I've been in 9 weeks.
Same with me. It's been, because we are now allowed to move, which is great. Yeah. And we're allowed to meet one other person from outside your household in a public place, and we're in a public place. So we're doing everything by the rules, but it's just a joy. Mm. It's a joy to actually sit and chat, rallying face to face. We've all been listening, as you say, to some great podcasts. We've been fortunate.
Am I now a podcaster?
You are now. I think a podcaster. You're not making a podcast yet, which is something maybe you want to think about, because as we know, there's still a massive interest.
Oh, go on, let me be a podcaster. Then I can say I was a homeschooler.
In a podcast-y? Maybe. I don't know what you are.
I'm not a photographer at the moment, so I'm a whole homeschooler.
Yeah. And that's
reluctant gardener. Yeah. I don't really like the garden.
Nor do I. No, I like to enjoy a good garden, but I don't like to actually create one. Difficult times. Cole, fantastic talking to you. I do really genuinely believe there's an awful lot more that we've still to talk about, and we will revisit. Mm. We'll revisit, because really we've just talked up to the formation of the McLean agency, and I think we need to talk about those years, those great years, those great pictures. We need to talk about your relationship with Richard, obviously, as well. But we'll save that for another day, because for now, Colin McMaster, the legendary Colin McMaster, thank you very much indeed for joining us this week on Spin the Rally Pod. You are and always will be a legend.
Well, Colin, I loved your intro and I prefer your finish, the finale. A grand finale. Thank you very much.
Cool, thank you very much indeed.